So I want to talk about the cricket.
Well, I think that's very bold of you. I mean, what an unbelievably tense ending. I could not believe it. And now the Australian listeners are going to go mental with us. They'll have a field day. Oh.
Yeah, not that cricket, actually.
Oh.
I want to talk about the really important match, which was me getting back on a cricket pitch for the first time in 30 years.
Well, that's extremely impressive. How did it go?
I played in the village cricket match and... I bowled. Firstly, we fielded first and I bowled two overs. And my main aim was just to try and get the ball down the end. It was so far. So I bowled okay and I got one maiden over. And then when I came to bat, I thought my only thought was, don't get out first ball. Do not get out first ball. That's all I wanted.
And?
I got out first ball.
Of course he did. Jesus still loves you, mate.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 245. It's been a long time.
You've forgotten how to read.
Of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis back from holiday.
Hey, hello. Hi. It's great to be back. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I mean, cricket was very exciting, wasn't it? But I couldn't believe, when I actually played, I couldn't believe how long a pitch was. I haven't played on a pitch for years. And it was as much as I could do to get the ball from one end to the other. That was all I could do. It was ridiculous.
Well, I'm impressed you even tried, mate. That is very, very good. Well done.
It was good fun. Nobody took it seriously, so it was all okay, really. Anyway, look, how are you? You're back.
Well, thank you. I'm really well, actually, really well. There was just everything a holiday should be. It was relaxing. The weather was good. The people were wonderful. The food was... I mean, it's just, you know, you come back. I was away for 2 weeks. It genuinely felt like a month. It was so lovely. And the birds. And, you know, Northumberland, we went on a boat trip to the Far Nine, saw the puffins and the guillemots and... And then we had a little time in Whitby with a friend. And then we went down to stay in Westleton, right by Minsmere. And on our anniversary, we went on the hunt for a swallowtail butterfly. And I'm happy to say we found them. So, and we saw a badger. Hey, I've never really seen a proper good view of a badger before.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a badger at Minsmere on the field there.
That's,
yeah, so that was great. A few too many churches for my liking.
Did you go to the ones that I recommended? I sent you a list.
You sent it and I immediately forgot about it.
I sent you a list. Do you know what? Somebody, a hermit, I think his name was Balthierry, used to live on the Farne Islands.
Not Kermit.
No, it was a hermit.
Yeah, not Kermit the hermit. Okay, carry on.
No, thank you. Can you imagine living there? With all those gannets.
Well, it must be wonderful. That I appreciate, yeah.
No, it's not wonderful. It's the most crapped on place on earth, isn't it?
That is also true. Yeah. So, yeah, isn't it great? So that's good. One of the unintended consequences of the Chiff Chaff song is, of course, we made it a solemn plea to every time we hear a Chiff Chaff burst into, I hear the sound of the Chiff Chaff. But I guess a bit tiresome. There's a lot of chiff chaffs, it turns out, in this country.
Yes.
So that
it
was
does
hard.
Stick in your head, though, doesn't it? That's
yeah, it does.
I still hum it, yeah.
And while you were sweltering, we were quite cold, it has to be said, in the Northumberland stretch of our holiday. It wasn't wet, but it was cold. So it was like 25, 26 degrees in Worthing and 12 and 13 degrees in Beadnall.
Yeah, it was really hot down here and storms and everything, yeah. Yeah.
But it was great. And the first week we were with a couple... Actually, we were with a couple of podcast listeners.
Really?
I mean, admittedly, they were friends as well. But it did give me an idea.
Okay. I think I know what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, because we're all into bivocational ministry. That's what it's all about. People could pay us to go on holiday with them. to top bird watching spots around the UK. It's just a thought.
Yes. It's not exactly a perk of the holiday, is it? I mean, it's just, you know, it's what? Not like paying for all your drinks or something like that. Have that all
inclusive. No, but it'd be Nick and Joe inclusive. And in fact, we would drink all the free booze.
I think a lot of people want Nick and Joe excluded.
You don't think we would enhance their holiday experience?
Well, I mean, if you're out there and you'd love us to come on your Caribbean jaunt, and you'd be all expenses paid, do get in touch.
Scintillating company.
For the first day or two.
Yeah, and then very tiresome.
Fades very quickly.
So yeah. Thank you. I'm very well. How are you, dear friend?
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, my car won't start.
Very restrained.
I was going to swear and have bongos put over it, but it won't. It just went. I've just now, you know, about an hour ago, just went up dead.
Is not a good thing. That's today's crisis.
That's today's crisis. It's just one thing after another.
I was meaning for the whole 2 weeks. You given me the crisis of the last half an hour. Maybe we haven't got time.
About, really.
Yeah, we haven't got time to go rehearse the last 2 weeks. I'm sorry. That is so depressing.
No, I've been a bit up and down, some struggles, but yeah. You know, it's but doing well in other ways and creatively doing well. I think I've got lots of good projects going on, so that's good.
Great.
My issue is I tend to catastrophize. So when a car won't start, that's, you know, obviously that's a dead car completely. Yeah. I'm going to have to get another car, you know. And the big problem I think we have as a society nowadays is there's simply too much material to catastrophize about.
Yes, that is true.
You know, I mean, basically, I'm overloaded with the possibilities. That's really it was much easier in the old days when basically your horse went lame or the harvest didn't work. That was the two things that didn't happen, you know. I suppose you could get the plague or something, or if you're on that hermit, be crapped on by gannets or something. Anyway, but you know, look.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that. But there have been some joyous things while you're away. Did you notice that the Bible has been banned in Utah?
Has it? No.
Well, only in one school. You know, in America, and forgive me, American listeners, they have this sort of epidemic of a book banning going on, basically.
Is that happening? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't want a book taught in your school or even in the school library, you can raise it, and lots of particularly books dealing with same sex issues or anything like that, they get banned. But then somebody turned the tables and said, "Well, hang on, the King James Bible is full of violence, and some sexual content."
Yeah.
And they've had no option. This school said, "Oh, well, I suppose we'll have to restrict it then."
Was it a Christian school?
I don't know, but I mean, I've always said the Bible is not for children, so it's fair enough. Really, it's very unsuitable. I never understand with book banning, because the one thing that human beings want to do is find out why something's been banned. You know, way back in the pre-Reformation days, the Catholics had this thing, the Index, which they put all the prohibited books on. And what the early printers used to do, the printing companies in Venice, they used to get hold of the Index and they would deliberately print all those books.
Of course they did. Yeah.
They knew they were surefire sellers.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, anyway. Did that. I've been to another film. I saw... is it Into the Spider-Verse, Up the Spider-Verse, Carry On?
Carry On Up the Spider-Verse.
Carry On Up the Spider-Verse.
That's a film I want to see.
With Charles Hawtrey as Peter Parker.
Kenneth Williams is his dad. Stop mugging about.
Sid James as the Green Goblin. It'd be fantastic. Yeah.
You do realise most of our audience have no idea what we're talking about.
No, this is true. Anyway, I saw the Spider-Verse thing.
All right. Stuff. How was it?
Do you know what? Ironically, I think you can have too many multiverses.
There are a lot.
There's another load in this one. And I think I'm a bit multiversed out, really. I've had enough, really. But it's very good. Visually, it's stunning.
But in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, it was quite fun.
I haven't seen that yet. That's yet another one, is it?
Yeah, there's a few multi-vi, whatever the plural is, in that.
Multiverses. I thought multiverse is really a description of a Hillsong, isn't it? There's too many verses of those. Anyway, Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's visually stunning. It's very good. But I think just some of the sort of tropes, some of the things that are in there now, you've probably had enough of.
I really enjoyed the first one. That was good. Yeah.
So if you enjoyed the first one, you'll enjoy this one. And talking of films, last point, talking of films, I'm in a podcast about films.
What? You're on another podcast?
Mm, yeah.
Oh, I go away for 2 weeks and that's how it is.
Well, this was done some time back. It's the God in Film podcast. I'll put a link up.
Oh, yeah, no, fabulous.
To the show.
Good. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, okay, cool.
Or really, I'm not really talking about the film. I'm talking about the depictions of God or how we understand God and the idea of God as Greek God. I wanted to talk about the film, and perhaps I do on the longer version because I thought it was rubbish. But, you know, that was a...
they edited you out.
personal reflection. They just wanted me on for the theology. But it's a good podcast. I think it's very well put together. You'd enjoy it. So
yes, no, they're irritatingly good. We don't want to be promoting good podcasts with perfect sound quality, do we?
Thank you very much to Giles for inviting me to do it, and to Claire, his wife, who joined him. It was very good.
Well, good for them. They must have been... scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, I think they threw it, dug through it and into the tarmac. Anyway.
So look, before we get into feedback, and there's lots of feedback to get through, I just thought it might be nice just to talk about, you know, how you've been experiencing the divine over the past couple of weeks and, you know, how that's been for you, really. How your theme is going.
Tricky. I mean, I think the thing is, when you have these tricky periods in your life, which I'm undergoing a little bit of at the moment, actually they are holy ground.
Mm.
But at the time, they don't feel particularly holy ground, And I think they are opportunities to come close because you're at your most vulnerable and you've got nothing else. It's a bit like, I think one of the most profound myths, if you want to use that word, stories. Yeah, in the Bible is Jacob wrestling with God at the river when he's got nothing, he's left it all behind and he comes away wounded but blessed. And I think that's kind of how I'm experiencing the divine at the moment. I feel very blessed, but I feel a little bit, you know, smote in the hip it is. Yeah, so I've been reading Anne Lamott's book. I don't know if you know.
I do know her.
Help, Thanks, Wow, her book on prayer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so lovely. And she is such a good person to read at these moments. And she talks in there about practicing radical gratitude.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Which I think is fantastic. I think what I'm trying to do at the moment is... I don't think I've got much headspace for my wisdomness stuff. I'm just trying to be grateful, even when the car won't start and everything needs doing and everything costs more
but
than
that's
you think.
Great.
But I'm trying to be grateful because
done.
I think, there we are. So that's me, really. I think I'm wrestling with God a bit, but it's all going okay, really.
Yeah.
How about you?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I've just had a lovely holiday, so everything is so easy on holiday, and then you have to come back to work.
That is the downside.
So I've come back, you know, fortunately to quite a lot of work, but it's been really busy, as you know, from when you just rung me before the podcast, because I hadn't sent anything through.
So
it's boring to keep saying the same old stuff, but, you know, connecting with nature, the birds... 108 different species, you know, just it feels such a privilege to just see a puffin close-up or a guillemot or a barn owl indeed, and just there was just loads of time. In fact, there was so much time sort of walking in nature, there was much less reading than I anticipated, actually, because it's traditional to take a pile of books and then bring most of the pile back unread, obviously.
It is, yes. Yeah.
But no, it's just it's confirmed that this is how I'm made. I know not everyone is. I know people love the city and I know other people love books and other people love this and that. But for me, to be out in nature is to connect with the divine.
Mm.
So basically, I had a whole holiday of it. And not just the nature, you know, meeting some friends along the way and really connecting with the divine through them as well. And the meals and the food, you know, all that stuff that I go crazy for. You know, a mealtime is just the most holy space for me. I know you're going to joke about it again, but it just is. I love it. So
I wouldn't joke about it. I think actually that's profoundly human. Meals and worship have always gone together. You know, feasts.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. I think there's I think that's the oddity in a way about how we do, for example, the Eucharist now, is that I still find it profoundly moving, but it's not a feast, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas originally it was in the context of a meal.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, you know. Well, there we are. Well, good. I'm glad you had such a good time.
Thank you.
I could tell from your messages that there was a lot of joy.
Indeed. Okay, let's crack on. Here we go.
Okay.
Time for some feedback. So this is going to be feedback exclusively on this occasion on the interview with Chris and our subsequent kind of conversation after that. So first up is Andrew, and he says, "Dear Nick and Joe, I can't criticise the book I haven't read, but I find myself in profound disagreement with many things Chris said in the interview. To pick up on just a couple of key points, I've read the Bible from cover to cover several times, and in my experience, it is very clear when I'm reading something intended to be appreciated as poetry, understood as allegory, or accepted as historical fact." Is it? I'm not sure. Anyway, he thinks it is. "So to be clear, I think there are passages that require to be understood as literal truth in order for our faith to make any sense at all. If, as Chris seems to be saying, the entire Jesus story is to be understood as myth, then what do we do with Jesus' promise, 'Everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day'? If that promise and others like it are not to be taken literally, then how should we understand them? Are we saying Jesus was wrong or deluded, perhaps? If the resurrection never actually happened, then what became of Jesus' body? If the ascension never happened, then assuming the resurrection is true, what happened next? Did Jesus live out his days until old age and then die naturally? I could go on, but as Paul says in Corinthians, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. Then those also who have fallen asleep in Christ are lost. If only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are to be pitied more than all men." So he says, "Without the literal truth of the resurrection and the promise of eternal life, then the entire case for Christianity collapses. We either believe it or we don't. Best regards, Andrew."
Mm.
Well, fair play, Andrew. Thank you so much for taking the time to write me the email. And actually, I wouldn't normally do this, but I forwarded that on to Chris and said, "Chris, would you mind just responding to this one?" We've had others, of course, and I didn't forward any others on, but I just thought so. So if I may, can I read out Chris's response?
Yeah,
to that?
Sure. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
And then we'll you know, jam on it.
Okay.
So
a jazz session.
Basically. Yeah. Chris says, "Hello, Andrew. I don't want to evade your questions, but at the same time, I feel that trying to do justice to them in what must be a relatively short reply might well feel like it. I need to start by saying that much of my understanding comes from being a psychologist who has given much time to the subject of human communication. We all start from where we are, with our own perceptual framework from which we see and understand the world. We see the world not as it is, but as we are." That's in inverted commas because it's obviously a quote. "When I first became a Christian some 55 years ago, I believed that the whole Bible was literally true because that was what was taught in the church I attended. At that time, I was totally black and white in my views. I preached on Hyde Park Corner with absolutely no doubts whatsoever that I was right. Over the decades, my perceptions have changed to where I am today. Black and white has become shades of grey and many more than 50 shades," he says. Shall I? He says, "There are some truths that are so profound that prose cannot get to the heart of it. It requires poetry, parable and myth to do it justice. The parable of Jonah and the big fish is about God's love and forgiveness for everyone. That's the point. Taken literally, it becomes an unbelievable fairy story. The phrase I use, a myth is a story about something that never was but always is, gets to the heart of it for me. A myth carries profound truth, but it needs to be accepted in the heart, not understood by the mind. I would encourage you to read the Jesus myth, Andrew, as that might give you a fuller picture of what I'm saying. But I'm not trying to convert you. If believing as you do is right for you, then stick to it. The aim in the end is, I believe, to live a life as Christ-like as we can, to live it out, to be it. In that respect, every individual with their own unique perceptual framework need to find what works for them at any given time in their lives. God and God's love is so much bigger than we can ever grasp. In Eastern traditions, when people try to speak of God, they say, neti neti, not this, not this. God is always more than we, as human beings, can begin to grasp. This is where I am on my spiritual journey, Andrew. I am not precious about it. Use it if it helps. Discard it if it does not. Very best wishes, Chris. Mm. Great. And thank you, Chris, as well, for replying. Yeah. And a wonderful, gracious reply as well. And very practicing non-defensiveness, which I appreciate. And of course, he picks up on that apophatic stuff, doesn't he? The neti neti thing there at the end. The minute you say God is something, you have to say, but not exactly like something. God is a father, but he's not a father, he's spirit, you know. And we've talked about this before, haven't we?
Yes, and I think I didn't really, when I responded to Chris, I didn't really talk much about the apophatic approach. I think there were some problems with it, in that it can be pushed too far, in the sense that it implies you can't really say anything. You know, do you know what I mean? People often use it to say, well, you know, anything you say about God is in essence sort of missing the mark.
Wrong. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's best summed up in the words of a worship song, if I may.
How like you?
Which is, I think by Matt Redman, I'm not sure. Which is, my words cannot say, not even in part, of the love that something for this humble heart.
Yeah.
And you look at that and think, well, that's a load of old tosh, isn't it? Mm. Because if your words can't even say anything, even in part, why bother? You might as well just stand there going, blah, 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 blah. That's not what he means, quite clearly.
I don't know, Nick. Really?
Yeah, that's what it means. If your words cannot say, not even in part, they can't say anything.
No, but if you're trying to describe love, it's very difficult to nail that one down. Because Rachel would say, love is making her a cup of tea. But actually, that's not what love is. But for her, that's how she receives it. I could make you a cup of tea and you wouldn't think that's love. You'd just think I'm making you a cup of tea and probably not a very nice one.
Well, I've tasted your tea, yeah. I mean, you know. No, but it is a bit of love.
So I suppose, I am saying in part.
The point I would say, the point I would say is, no, your words can say in part.
Okay.
They can say a bit. They're not entirely, otherwise why would we sing anything in the first place? They're not entirely without it, without some truth. So this would be my point about metaphor and the apophatic thing, is that, yes, all metaphors are partial.
Yeah.
But they do say something truthful.
Yes.
That's the whole point.
Yes, of course. And I'm sure Chris wouldn't disagree with that.
So if you keep going neti neti, not this, not this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, well, what then? You know, give me something.
Yeah, sure.
And so I think that's the danger with the apophatic approach, is that it can actually lead to a kind of almost helplessness where you go, well, we can't really say anything if you push it too far.
Yeah. Really.
I don't think this is generally what people mean, but the implication is there.
Yeah. I'm going to concede the point, but I have to say I found it extremely helpful in my own sort of journey through mid-faith, I suppose.
No, I think that's the thing. It's not without foundation. Of course, as you said at the beginning, in the intro, you say God is a father, yes, but he's much more. He's also a mother. And the minute you say father, you're missing out on some other aspects. Yeah. Of course you are. But nevertheless, fatherhood, the essence of fatherhood, you know, it is part of what God is. It's a useful metaphor for some people to understand the divine. So I think that I wouldn't push the neti neti bit too much. I think what Andrew is saying is where I am as well, is that actually it's all about how you understand what type of writing you're dealing with.
Sure, although Andrew said it's very clear, and I don't always think it is.
No, I think it can be tricky, but I think I think largely it's clear. I think it's on the whole it's clear. Okay. There are some bits where you could question.
Well, I mean, I would say the ascension and the virgin birth. There you go. There's two controversial ones right off the block.
Well, I would say with both of those, they are accounts of what people thought happened, actually happened.
Yeah.
They're not people trying to give a poetic myth.
Okay.
Now, you may say I choose to interpret them as that.
I do.
But in the style of writing...
Yeah.
I mean, we know Luke, for example, is very careful at the beginning of his gospel to say, look, I've looked at all the sources, I've gathered all the sources. Yeah. He's working in the context of a Greco-Roman historian.
Yeah, sure. No, fair play.
So he is not writing a story.
Mm.
One of the few lines I'm really proud of having written, and there aren't many in considering how many lines I have written, is about the resurrection.
You've written many good lines, Nick. Just to say.
Mostly innuendo. But is that Jesus did not go into the tomb a man and come out a metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, he that's not what the gospel writers were saying.
Okay.
So that's where I would align. I mean, and when talk about it's gone out of my head now. Who's the bloke with the fish? Get swallowed.
Jonah.
Jim, yes, Jonah. That one. Lovely lad.
Mm.
The thing about Jonah's story is that you could take it in its genre, in the way it's written as a story.
Mm.
It could be quite entirely possible that the person writing it was writing a fable and knew they were writing a fable. That, I don't think, is the style of the Gospels.
Okay.
That's not how they're written.
Sure.
And so that's the issue for that, really.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, I've spoken a lot. Do you want to come back to me on that or respond in other things?
I do, but can I read one more email out? And then I'll say my very little bit after that, if I may.
You may, yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, no, it sounds fine.
Okay. Well, firstly, I mean, thank you to everyone who has written it. Samuel wrote in with a really great email as well. I think Tom repeats some of these bits, so I'm just going to read Tom's now, but thank you, Sam, for writing in. Tom says this: Hi, Joe and Nick. I'm sure you'll be inundated with emails. We weren't inundated, I don't think. He says, so I'll be as brief as possible. So there we are, he says, and you're getting two for one, as these are thoughts from both me and my wife. He says, I'd love to have a conversation with Chris Scott and ask him why archetypes exist, even as the metaphors he describes them as, and why goodness would draw us to itself or should be sought at all. Why is there any value in becoming truly human? He managed to agree a creed that said, I believe in God, so perhaps his answer would be God. But why is he so certain that the power that created the universe couldn't manifest itself in whatever quirky, localised way it chooses? To quote Frank Skinner, if you believe in God, all bets are off. The attempt at semi-rationality, God exists, but it's ludicrous to say he could raise someone from the dead, seems fully irrational to me. Is it harder to raise someone from the dead than to create a universe and imbue it with a sense of meaning, goodness and beauty? Second, I think whilst his approach sounds optimistic and inclusive, it can very easily be cold, apathetic and despondent. Relationships and love are what give life meaning. Wonderful for me, I'm richly blessed in those areas. But what about a child soldier or a modern slave? Someone with a painful, debilitating condition who has no family or friends to support them through it. To comfortable Westerners, the unlikely events described in the Bible do indeed seem silly. But believing in a God who created you and loves you, who died and rose for you, who will restore his creation, including you, and that even if you don't know love and kindness, you will, and your endless tears will be wiped away, and you will join his garden city where you will finally know wholeness and community, and Scott poo-poos it. Or what about people who look deep inside and just don't find much and are glad that their faith is as precious to God as theology professors or psychoanalysts' faith? The gospel is actually inclusive in a way that introspective, agnostic self-help will never be. Finally, I will end with my wife's response, probably the wisest. Many Christians struggle to fully believe all of the miracles, the virgin birth, the resurrection, 100% of the time. Rather than find convoluted ways to sort of believe, to find how it might still be metaphorically, psychologically, archetypally true, and as Nick says, it can be all those things as well, they choose to say, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. All the best to you both, Tom.
Mm.
So that was a good email, wasn't it?
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So what do you have to say then?
Well, I fear I'm going to say something extremely disappointing now, but I have to say it. I'm just going to say it as I see it. I know there's a book once written called Who Rolled the Stone, but no one can actually prove in 2023 the literal resurrection of Jesus. I'm not saying whether I believe it or not. I'm just saying no one can actually prove it.
Mm-hmm.
If they could, I assume more people would believe. So we take the resurrection on faith. And I have met many angry people who would defend it to the hilt. And maybe they're right to do that, you know. But where I'm at in my journey right now, I honestly think, as I've said before, I don't really care much what people say they believe. I really care about what kind of people they are and what they do and how they are. And so I'm wondering whether, just thinking, looking back on my life and having met with real diehard evangelicals and diehard progressive Christians and all that sort of thing, it's almost, and I'm not going to say irrelevant what they believe, because I know you jumped down my neck straight away, because what you believe does matter. I get that. Mm-hmm. But it almost doesn't seem to matter sometimes to how they behave. Mm. So I've known the most Christ-like, ardent evangelicals, real, you know, Bible-believing, taking most of it literally, but they are kind and loving, and you can just see something of the love of God in them. Equally, I have known really difficult, angry, pain-in-the-neck progressives who don't on the surface, you know, in my perceptions, and they may well be Christ, they don't seem that Christ-like to me, they just seem angry. And vice versa. I've met very wonderful, you know, kind, humble, like Chris, just beautiful human beings. And Dave Tomlinson would be another one. People I aspire to be like in their Christ-likeness, who believe very almost opposite things to the evangelicals, the very opposite. So I'm starting to wonder whether at the end of the day, it's not so much what you believe, but the way you believe it. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like the energy you use with your beliefs. Like, you can meet really ardent fundamentalist Christians, and have you ever been to these debates? And then ardent fundamentalist atheists, and they're both using the same energy. You know, they're both right. Yeah, they're both strong. They're both convicted that they're absolutely 100% correct. And no one leaves changed. They just leave angry. Mm. Or maybe glad that they may have scored a point or two. And I'm trying to make sense of the people I've met and the life I'm living. And, you know, sometimes the most Christ-like people I meet would say they're atheists and have no faith. What do you do with that? You have to say, well, that's a shame, but you should have said a prayer, really, at the end of the day, because you're going to spend eternity away from God. I know you love your wife and your kids and you're kind and you give to charity and you do all sorts of wonderful things, but not enough because you didn't say the prayer. You didn't believe in Jesus. Sorry, mate. So, yeah, I think I think having met with Chris, and I don't want to idolize him or anything, but I just think he's a truly wonderful human being. He struck me as humble and Christ-like. As you strike me when, you know, privately.
I do strike you.
As you strike me privately as humble and Christ-like, and I want to be like you as well. So, you know, you and Chris believe different things. Yet Christ somehow has bound us all together. And so I mean, this is just me. I don't feel like having a lot of energy to go around talking to evangelicals saying, well, I don't believe that. Or saying to Chris, well, I think you got it wrong there. You got it. I suppose I want to work more for unity between us. And I think that this Mid-Faith Crisis podcast, I want to openly state, is a place for anyone who believes whatever they believe. But can we learn together to hold our views with a degree of humility and love and respect for one another and Christ-likeness? And I have to say, sometimes, as we know, it's the theology of I don't know a lot of the time. I mean, some days I think, well, the one thing you can never touch is the resurrection. You can't touch the literalness of the resurrection because, as Tom was saying, the whole thing falls apart. Or was it Andrew who said that? You know, this is like, you know, Paul himself says we're to be absolutely pitied. If that's not true, then we're all deluded. And that seems a very logical train of thought to me. But other days, I think, no, I know how stories change through time. And it doesn't mean there isn't truth, you know, a metaphor, a mythological truth to them. It just means it might not be literal fact. And I can see that. I mean, you know, our beloved founder at Oasis used to tell a story about how he became a Christian. And I've heard that story for 40 years, and I've heard it change. and incorporate, you know, he started as his humble dream to start a charity for a homeless, and it's, you know, it's become more. And I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying that's not true. I wonder if it is mythologically true sometimes. But
perhaps he's turned into an archetype.
I think he has turned into an archetype. So I get how stories change, but you know, the truth in them and the heart in them, and it's still profoundly helpful for us as humans. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, look, there's lots in what you say. I think, firstly, your point about the literal tree, you can't prove it. Yes, you couldn't prove it a few years afterwards. And Paul was going, look, we've got witnesses. And one of the things about it is he says there are 500 people alive who saw the resurrected Christ. Yeah. Okay, he says that.
That's strong. Yeah, sure.
That's testimony, but it's not going to be proof.
No.
Because there was no video footage or anything like that. Yeah. You know, there's nothing like that. And even Paul's argument, I've always thought Paul's argument for the resurrection, you know, if he wasn't raised, then we're all fooling ourselves. That might be a reasonable statement, but it's not an argument for the literal resurrection. Because there's lots of things, you know, that doesn't make, you know. So I totally accept that. It's testimony we're dealing with, as we've talked about a lot on here. I think it would come back to your statement about, you know, it's about, you know, being the most Christ-like person and the way you believe what you believe.
Mm.
I would say, well, what is it that enables you to be the most Christ-like person? Mm. Because actually, the promise of the gospel is not just that if we can really strain ourselves to become Christ-like, then we get in. It's that actually Christ's spirit, the resurrected Christ's spirit, will work with us, will dwell with us to enable us together to strive towards that.
Yeah.
We don't do it alone. So Paul says in Ephesians, you know, that I pray that Christ may grant you, may strengthen you in your inner being with power through his spirit, and that Christ may dwell in your hearts. So I think what's happening there is when you see people who say, well, I don't really know about this, that, or the other, but their lives are demonstrating something powerful and strong, then actually the risen Christ is dwelling with
them. I think you're right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what distinguishes the sort of angry fundamentalist from the Christ-like fundamentalist, or the angry liberal from the Christ-like liberal,
or
dare I even say it, the angry atheist from the Christ-like atheist.
Yes, exactly.
But somehow they're open and the spirit of Christ is dwelling. And doesn't that happen because you press a button, because you go, I've prayed this prayer, therefore Christ has no option but to now attend me.
Yeah.
It's an openness in us towards it. So again, for me, that's part of the believing in the resurrection. It's that the spirit is with us.
Yeah.
And we're not left alone.
Well, I certainly believe in the spirit. I mean, I feel like I've been connecting with it, you know, constantly through the holiday and everything. And Christ, not just in people, but in the birds and the animals and the trees as well. All of that stuff. So, yes, exactly right. Well, we sort of, despite coming on very different paths, we sort of ended up in agreement there, I hate to tell you.
I mean, no, we did. I think, I think it's interesting. I think that if to recognise the way that Christ is working within us it is a great thing. To help other people to recognise the way that Christ is working within them is also a great thing. And to encourage them like that. And I think what happens when you meet these people, when you met Chris or when I've met other people that I know, you know, you recognise Christ's spirit powerfully at work within people.
Exactly. And it would be good for me to interview someone who has polar opposite views to Chris, but is still really Christ-like. You know, it's just an interesting thing to note. People can hold vastly different views about God, the divine, mother, as many people might want to call God rather than father, and actually they're bound in the spirit of Christ because they are Christ.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. Good. Well, what do you make of that, listeners? That's what I want to know. What do you think of this conversation? Have we got it all wrong? Have we, you know, finally lost the plot totally? Love to hear from you. Please do please do send your emails. Point your email machine to, as we like to say, to Joe at midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you on this. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast.
Yes.
That's always lovely. Yeah, and we've had a few gifts recently. That's lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you for people have written nice reviews as well, which is lovely as well. So that's
might have
nice.
Stopped after this one, of course. But yes, thank you.
Well, yeah, you can't win them all. And just thank you for being there. Thank you for downloading this, and do get in touch. Yeah. We'll be back with you next week, I think.
Yes. Can I finish with one story? A true story.
Is it true though? Is it? Or is it a myth?
No, it's literal, historical.
Oh, okay.
Right. I met with a friend, doesn't listen to the podcast, so I think I'm safe sharing this. And he was talking about, he's just a very enthusiastic, wonderful Christian man. I just love this guy. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, you know, isn't it great? Yesterday I drove into central London. I was running late and I just prayed to God to give me a parking space. And, you know, and I drove up to the thing and God provided a parking space right outside. It was incredible. And he turned to me and he said, isn't it lovely when God does these little things? And I think you're going to be proud of me. Do you know what my response was?
Go on.
I said, yes, it is.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thought you'd be proud of me.
It's radical gratitude.
It's radical gratitude. See you next week.